going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's coming soon, right? You're going to be able to get that ESPN app.
Well, that I think maybe that would be the answer of, like, what is best for people is if ESPN acquires it and basically just views it like they do with their hockey package, where I believe, George, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have every team, but they have the rights to most teams. Obviously, blackouts apply locally. You can't watch every NHL game on ESPN Plus, but you can watch, like, what, 75% of them?
The vast majority, yes. So, and you can choose which broadcast you want.
So if they're going to maybe package it like that, maybe that's what's best for fans. But I'm unclear if when this thing launches. So, for instance, right now, we have the Hulu ESPN Disney Plus bundle.
Right.
Am I going to have to pay for something additionally to get all this other stuff? Like, is that going to be the same ESPN app that we're talking about?
ESPN Plus?
So, like, right now,
is it going to go away absorbed by the new app?
My ESPN, if you log into my ESPN account, I'm logged in with DirecTV, so I can watch whatever the over-the-air broadcast games, ESPN, U, SEC Network, whatever, all that. And then we are logged in with the bundle for Plus. Does that mean if I have those things, am I still going to be able to use the app, or am I going to have to buy something in addition?
The price is definitely going to go up. One of my biggest problems with ESPN Plus has always been, like, it's not ESPN Plus. It's because it's not ESPN. Like, there's not the Plus. The Plus always makes it feel like you've got ESPN Plus more. But, like, you don't have ESPN Plus more. You have extra stuff, but not ESPN. It's like ESPN Extra or extra stuff that's broadcast by ESPN.
It doesn't
but it's not
feel additive.
Like, you don't get
your point.
You
is
don't
it doesn't
get
feel
ESPN
additive.
Plus more.
Right.
That's what you feel like.
You get ESPN, and then internet.
But you don't get it. But if you have ESPN Plus, you don't get ESPN.
Correct.
You'd have to, but
I believe if you have the Hulu bundle, don't you have ESPN?
Yeah, I mean, it depends if you've got. See, I think
I want to say this was the fall. Remember when they were trying to, when ESPN was shoving press releases down our throat that now you can get ESPN programming on Hulu? So, like, if you fire up the Hulu app, which is objectively, like, one of the 5 worst apps out there, if you fire it up on the top bar, you will see, you know, the ESPN live game, like they're shoving that down our throats. And I think they're also doing it with Disney.
Well, and again, going back to the problem, all this is always, it starts getting real confusing and twists around. But let's go back real quick to the play-in games. They were all, as far as I noticed, every play-in game was on Turner Network Television until the last game. It was on ESPN.
Yep.
That's right there is what you got a problem with with the NBA. Like, you've got to figure out where, like, okay, so what's the show on right now? Everybody's watching, what's that one on HBO?
The Pit.
Whatever.
Last of Us.
Whatever, yeah. Anyway, name any
video
show.
Game one?
Yeah.
The Last of Us.
That's it. What if every episode is on one thing and then you put the finale on a different channel? Like, yeah. I mean, what are you doing here? Like, yeah, like you have to have a different app. Like, you could watch all these games on TNT. Great, fantastic. But then if you don't have ESPN, like, you can't even watch the finale of this play-in tournament because you got to have a different thing. So stop switching it around.
I can't believe I'm about to do this. I will take up for them.
You take up for this?
I think that's,
I was logged into my HBO ready to watch.
I think it's headed there. I think the problem is the rights are still written into the last contract, mm-hmm. and the last contract was written largely before all of the, like, Max didn't even exist. And so I think the problem is they're running into legality. I think what they would tell you is next year when the new TV deal starts.
Are they all going to be on ESPN or they're all going to be on NBC? Or they're all going to be.
So obviously you're going to have to have the Cock. You're going to have Prime. And then you're going to have ESPN. But you will be able, if you have.
And an antenna.
And correct. Then, well, maybe.
If you want to watch ABC.
I think ESPN is going to carry the ABC games. My understanding is if you have this ESPN app, you're going to be able to watch those.
And then you're
going to
need something to watch your local broadcast.
But then I don't know if blackouts apply. I mean,
that's the most made sense streaming option would have been to have one streaming service have the local broadcast on it. That would just make sense. But maybe we'll get there.
Maybe that's what they're trying to get to. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the list. A little bit of Tiger recruiting news. We'll get into that. Also, Kevin and I, we got to review Mania. We got to talk about it. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, we do a little thing called the list. Let's get into it. Dane Danger and Dante Harris. Yes, according to Jason Munns over at The Commercial Appeal, Memphis basketball crossed a critical transfer portal threshold with something to show for it. All AAC big man Dane Danger, who is out of college eligibility but is pursuing a waiver, and point guard Dante Harris took a big step towards returning to Penny Hardaway's Tigers for the upcoming season by opting not to enter the transfer portal before the April 22nd deadline. Players can still transfer after the deadline, but they would not be eligible for the upcoming season without a waiver from the NCAA. Danger and Harris are the only players on this season's roster who did not enter the portal by April 22nd. Of course, All-American P.J. Haggerty, P.J. Carter, Baraka Okoji, Jared Harris, Dink Yates, and Buna Kibe have entered the portal, although none has announced any subsequent moves. Danger was a revelation for the Tigers down the stretch, Munns writes, with 18.5 points, 8.5 rebounds over his final 16 games. Hardaway wants him back. Danger wants to return. Never mind the apparent mix-up between him and his agents recently. Of course, though, the issue with Dane is whether or not that waiver will actually occur. And with Dante Harris, it just gives the Tigers some depth in the front court. But I don't know. I mean, does this move the needle for you at all, Kevin?
No, I mean, no. I think it solidifies to me what we're being told here. You know, this is like, if this is the big news for the portal for the Tigers, then
I mean, if Dane, I guess this is the problem that I have. If you told me Dane was likely to get the waiver, well, that does make me feel a little differently, because then you actually have an exciting player returning.
100%.
But it also feels like
no doubt about it.
Feels
star
like,
of the first half yeah. of the March Madness game for the Tigers.
But it just feels like, all right, well.
Well, what's going on with PJ?
That's cool.
Is there a replacement for PJ Haggerty? What's happening? So
yeah, Penny spoke yesterday. I mean, the way that I kind of interpreted the message is he's not banking on it, but if things were to not go the way that PJ wants, the door was still open, as in they'd keep the seat warm for him, but they're not operating like he's coming back. I mean, to me, right. It's just going to be this question of how serious is PJ about playing point guard? Because if that really is the primary motivation, well, then he's not getting the $4 million.
I mean, what would you rather have, Jeffrey, $4 million or a play point?
I think
the point guard position.
I would clearly rather have the $4 million. I guess the question though is,
why does it matter? Like the position, I don't know.
So he's trying to have his cake and eat it too.
Right.
So I want the high money, but people would be paying him as a two guard, but at the same time, my only NBA chance is at point guard. His size means he can't be a two at the NBA. He just can't guard.
But can he not just like take his I personally, and he could make his own decision here, but you take the most money that you can get right now, because if you're getting in the millions to play college basketball, which he's going to get, then take that money. Don't worry about your position, because at least you can G League it. If you really have a shot for the NBA, like, there's a path for you not necessarily this old traditional path.
I suspect that's what he's going to do.
Take the money.
I think what we have
to
realize is,
but the Tigers don't have that money.
Well, so much of the college basketball transfer portal, so much of it is controlled by the agents, because there are so many players out there. There's no way to like really cover it kid by kid by kid. You're relying on the agents for the information. Therefore, they're going to present the information right, how they would like it. So in the end, PJ's saying, I want $4 million and I want to play point guard.
He might get $3 million.
Basically, agents are doing what they guard. Do, which is, what's something you don't really care about, but we can make it seem like we're negotiating.
There you go.
The point guard aspect of it.
It's all about negotiation. Yeah.
I suspect the $4 million is the part that he cares the most about.
I mean, and as you should, because I mean, I knew before, like when you're playing college basketball, you're trying to position yourself to be successful in the NBA because that's where the money is at. But now, you can get the money now while you're playing college basketball. So it's totally different.
Yeah, and
I don't think you have to worry as much about playing a certain position.
The reason why I'm also a little skeptical of the whole point guard thing. When the Tigers were actively trying to re-recruit him.
Right.
Which is such an insane thing to say. I think that's how you're really re-recruiting your roster. Not even like every year, every game. Yeah. But when they were doing that, part of it was, hey, I want a Tyrese Hunter replacement, because I think part of the reason why I had such a great year is because Tyrese was a great point guard.
Right.
There was no discussion about playing point guard. Now all of a sudden there is, and to me that just reeks of, that smells like agent speak.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I agree, because if he was, yeah, the point guard aspirations, I don't see it, but whatever. We'll see. We'll see where he goes.
Again, I have no ill will towards him. I wish
he
him,
needs to get yeah gets.
I wish him the best.
Get where he needs to go, and
the problem is now it's like it's just with Penny. It's like you got to go find the next one, because that's kind of the spot that they're in. All right, WrestleMania 41. All right, Kevin, give me your review.
All right,
you go first, because you have been more. You've been more skeptical than I was coming in. So you tell me how you viewed it.
Well, yeah, for sure. So WrestleMania, the marquee match this year was for the WWE Championship. John Cena, of course, recently turned heel just not much longer than a month ago, and about 6 weeks ago or so. And he's wrestling Cody Rhodes in the main event. Cody Rhodes has been champion since last year's WrestleMania.
I heard once or twice it was where he finished his story.
Yes, he did. He finished his story, babyface, son of a plumber, finishing his story.
Husband to a hot wife.
Yeah, winning the belt that his dad never could get, and true babyface in Cody Rhodes. So this was a big match. I mean, it's two potentially Rhodes who's...
And the
big names in this
the
business.
Actual legitimate mentor of Cody Rhodes, no kayfabe, was John Cena.
Right.
Like, Cody was basically, when he first got to WWE, he was basically John's, like, personal assistant. Drove him everywhere, wrote, like, all of it.
So this was a big match, especially knowing John Cena's retiring. You're not going to see him at WrestleMania again. He's going for the record 17th championship. As of last week, he was tied with Ric Flair at 16, quote unquote, for both of these guys.
Sure.
You know
what I mean.
Yeah, 16-time champion. But so we talked on the
Flair
show. Like
Flair congratulated him on a great match.
Yeah. I mean, I told you, like, I felt like it was, if you don't see heels win at the end of WrestleMania very often, but also this WrestleMania is not being run by Vince McMahon, and it is a unique situation because you don't see somebody having one of their last matches at WrestleMania. Somebody as big of a star as John Cena having their last match ever at WrestleMania and going for a record, right? You never get a chance to see a record be broken. You saw the Undertaker record broken. You know how much they love that, even though, you know, that was mishandled. But The even though I was there live to see it, so shout out. The
it was shocking.
It was anyway, so John Cena was a heel. I was not surprised that he won, and I think I probably convinced you and many other people that it seemed, was very realistic that he would win.
Well, no, I was with you because it was like the only way it makes any sense was for him to win.
But the way it happened did not make sense. I think Cody Rhodes looked so much worse than he did going into that match. But also, The Rock didn't show up. That's a big story. People were expecting The Rock to be there since he kick-started this entire heel turn for John Cena. He's been MIA since that story has been fumbled in a lot of different ways. But anyway, so John Cena wins.
Travis Scott thing a troll?
The Travis Scott thing, I can understand. So the big moment in the match.
To the audience, I want to be very clear. I am someone that acknowledges Travis Scott is massive.
Massive star.
I am
one of the biggest stars to be involved in a wrestling angle.
But it feels like the way that they are utilizing him, it's almost like they're trolling us.
What I did not understand is he gets an entrance. It would have made more sense, Jeffrey, I think, to all of us. Maybe, so you get heel Cena, right? Cena turns heel. And this Travis Scott just becomes his like entourage manager type of guy, right?
Sure.
Like the Travis Scott is following him around. Part of heel Cena is he's got Travis Scott by his side, and they're doing. And if Travis would have walked to the ring with him for this match, I think it would have made even more sense. But the fact that it was in the middle of the match, they're playing music, and Travis Scott just walks out slower than a grandma walking across the street.
And we had to hear his song the entire weekend.
And so he comes out so slow and then interferes in the match. And this guy is skinnier than you and I, you know, like being involved in the most pivotal moment of the main event. It was awful. It was an awful way to finish. And so there's obviously in the wrestling community is discussing all types of conspiracy theories of how did we get here? Was this the way it's supposed to be? Why are you booking it like this? Travis Scott coming out obviously made people think The Rock was also going to come out since they were their buddies or whatever. Is there a rift backstage between The Rock and Triple H? There's a lot you could dive into on that. But as far as that, the main event, obviously awful. I think the entire WrestleMania has not been 2 days for very long. And if it's going to continue to be, man, they've got to figure out a way to fix it and make the undercard more exciting. Because really,
I think they did figure out a way to fix it last year, in which made it sense where you have The Rock's big match on Saturday combined with Roman on Sunday. You had there was a connection between the two, whereas there was no connection between these two.
There was definitely no connection. I do think both matches were like deserving main event matches. The triple threat match on Saturday, it goes without saying. If you haven't watched that, you should. I mean, it's great.
It's an all-timer.
It's an all-timer. It would have, to me, I think Vince would have had a belt in that match. Vince was running the company. I do think Vince would have had a belt on the line in that match because it was kind of missing like, you go through all this, but for what? Just to win the main event?
I mean,
I do feel like there was like, should have been a belt.
I was sitting there in my wrestling group chat. I was like, so let me get this straight. The stakes of this are really it's Roman versus Punk over Paul Heyman, and Seth hates CM Punk so much that Seth's getting involved.
Because a lot of how the finish went was like you were thinking, why is Seth there, right? Why is Seth? It didn't make sense. It's either Seth versus, and a lot of it just did.
I'm a massive Seth guy.
But it needed to be there.
But I'm with
and
you.
It was great. Like, it was a great match. But anyway, I felt like the undercard watching.
Heyman was spectacular.
Is Paul Heyman is a MVP. And
that's
like, if you just go back to, like, Paul Heyman 30 years ago was running ECW. 30 years ago. And now here he is, like, in the main event of WrestleMania. Paul Heyman, a guy who really. If he didn't get a start in Memphis, as Paul E. Dangerously, his biggest moment at the start of his career happened here because his early part of his career, like so many people, started in Memphis. He was involved, for those who don't recall. This is when Paul Heyman used to carry a cell phone to the ring,
like
Zach Morris, before cell phones were a big thing. But Paul Heyman in the corner of Austin Idol in the epic cage match, one of the biggest Memphis wrestling matches of all time, Austin Idol versus Jerry the King Lawler, because you know what happens at the end of that match, right? You know what the stipulation is. Lawler's hair was on the line. Lawler lost and got his head shaved in the middle of the ring at the Mid-South Coliseum. One of the biggest matches in Memphis wrestling history. Paul Heyman's involved with that, and that's in the middle of that's 40 years ago, Jeffrey. 40 years ago. And now here we are.
Kind of sounded like Heyman right there.
Yeah. And now he's...
Ladies and gentlemen.
And now he's involved in it. So Paul Heyman, no doubt, he is like And then he goes on Pat McAfee, and it's like he's making ESPN executives go nuts on by watching that, because Pat McAfee's got creative control of that show. And my goodness, like, you're talking NFL draft week, NBA playoffs are going on, and Pat McAfee's talking about wrestling for the entire time, and is bringing in Paul Heyman saying things about talent that's on the channel. It was
well, bringing up the lawsuits. Yeah,
but Paul Heyman, no doubt, is the.
He's the biggest winner of the week.
He was great. I just felt like the undercard didn't have that feeling. We talk about the Grizzlies playoffs going on, right? Like, is it going to feel like a true Grizzlies playoff?
Yeah.
There's a certain feeling. You cannot describe it. You have to experience it to know it, right? And like WrestleMania, like, did all of those matches, did it feel like WrestleMania most of the time during the undercard, outside of the fact that the sun was setting, which is a WrestleMania, like, trademark thing now, like, you know, yeah, to be daylight and by the main event it's dark. Like, outside of that, did it feel that much different than a regular show? Was it just a Monday Night Raw or a SmackDown for many of those matches? And yeah, I think there were some highlights, some big matches. Could have all been all in one big epic. I would love to have just one awesome show versus one that kind of drags and parts.
Yeah, and I think the problem is, if they're going to make so much money off of it, you got to get as many people on the card as you can to try and take care of people. I thought that Saturday and Sunday were the reverse of each other. Like, I thought Saturday was, I thought the crowd was pretty, like, dead. And then the main event rocked. I mean, it was awesome.
Yes, and the electricity. It was a big deal, CM Punk main eventing, you know, his first ever WrestleMania. That was a career achievement. And three of the biggest stars in the industry right now.
And then I thought Sunday, because I was kind of disappointed. I was like, this is the corporatization of Mania. It's in Vegas. It's super expensive. You're going to have the Super Bowl situation.
I feel like they're slipping crowd into that, Jeffrey. That's not to be ignored. I know,
but I did think Sunday's crowd was great, and then I thought Sunday rocked.
Well, the opener might have helped it, I guess, on Sunday.
Sunday rocked. The women's title match was great, Sunday rocked up until the Logan Paul AJ match. And as an AJ Styles guy, I got to put that on AJ, because Logan Paul I thought was still pretty good. And then the I'm with you. The main event fell flat.
That whole thing with Cena, the Cena heel turn still has been flat, and it's his, you know, it's his
I'm still
tour.
Willing.
The end of it.
I'm still interested in the sense that it's almost like, because I agree with you that the plan doesn't feel fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
This feels very Star Wars sequel trilogy, where, like,
yeah,
you know, like, no one really knows where they're headed.
Like, you kind of know you want it,
but I kind of think that's keeping my interest in that it's like, how are they going to get out of this? Where are they going?
But now they're going to do Randy Orton, John Cena, right? Which,
we haven't seen that before, have we?
We've seen it a million times. It makes sense for this, for them to do that this year. I think they need to do that. So, you know, do it. You know,
finish the.
I mean, they wrestle each other a million times, so do it one more time. I mean, Sting, Flair, you know, you got to have Lawler, Dundee. Cena, Orton one more time. If Cena's really retiring, we've got to see Cena versus Orton this year. I'd rather it be now instead of the very end. Let's have something meaningful at the end of John. This is John Cena's retirement year. He is retiring at the end of the year, and I do believe it, because this guy's busy. He's doing a lot of movies, and that's part of the reason the storyline.
I just don't
think
he wants to be in the ring anymore. I think
that match was so, and it's on John Cena, it's on Cody Rhodes. There's a lot of issues with that match on Sunday, and not just the interference that was so random with Travis Scott, but
I kind of think that's the point. I think the whole thing of this Cena is
the,
like,
trolling part of it?
Yeah, I think it's it. Like, it's like,
no, that's what Cena's acting like it is, but
I gotta imagine he's got a lot of creative control.
Sure.
I would think that. I would imagine he's got a large say of how.
But anyway, WrestleMania, it felt like there was too much of it.
It felt like a pay backlash season pay-per-view.
Yeah, but luckily we can fast forward through much of. Hey, well, how about this? Like, you talk about Travis Scott, one of the biggest stars I've ever had, be involved like in a main event. Again, if he would have come to the ring with Cena, I would have. It would have been just that small little touch would have helped a little bit. They had Jelly Roll sing the America. Like, Jelly Roll was singing America the Beautiful. Usually, it's somebody I've never heard of, and I'm Googling, like, who's this? Who's this lady they brought in? But they had Jelly Roll this year.
We had that experience on Sunday with whoever it was singing the anthem.
Yeah.
I still have no idea. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, CJ Hurt joins the program. Let's get back into the Grizzlies. We'll do that next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
we get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
ESPN. The Zen Sports app is getting a major upgrade soon. They'll be launching the new state-of-the-art VIP Play app later this month. You'll be able to bet on more than 200 sports leagues and parlay nearly every bet offered, period. Also, my own same-game parlays featured, as will many more of your favorite sports talk hosts throughout the state. Head on over to zensports.com/VIP play to learn more and to claim an early welcome bonus offer on VIP Play when it launches later this month here in Tennessee. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to wager. CJ Hurt is, of course, a Grind City Media personality. You can see him on The Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt each and every weekday. Also, check out the HBCU Huddle on Twitter, on X, at ConRadicalness. CJ, do you have any positives from the Oklahoma City Thunder series?
From nothing from game one, no. From game two, at least they tried. Listen, if you play the sport, you've been in this situation before where the other team is clearly better than what you are. And you just have to dig deep within yourself and say, okay, they're better than us. And if I'm going to go out, I am going to go out fighting, swinging, competing. And they did that in game two. They didn't do it in game one at all. The Thunder went on that run that they went on in the second quarter, and the Grizzlies folded, heads were slumped, and they just stopped. They went on another run this past game in game two, and the Grizzlies clawed back. The Thunder pushed the lead to 20. The Grizzlies would cut it down to 16. The Thunder would, again, push the lead to 20. The Grizzlies would cut it down to 14. Thunder mid-20 lead. The Grizzlies battle back, cutting the lead down into the single digits. And that's the stuff competitors do. You can't be great if you can't compete. And if the Grizzlies had a lay down in game two, which they didn't, thankfully, I question how great this team could be. Now, I still have questions schematically about what they are, not just as it pertains to the Thunder, but as it pertains to the rest of their adversaries in the Western Conference. But at least they went out there and competed, and we don't have to question their heart and their desire.
Schematically, what would you like to see different? What's causing you questions there?
I mean, it's nothing they can fix this year. They are what they are this year. I want to be clear. They're a team that struggles an offensive rebound. They're a team that struggles to get back in transition defense. They're a team that struggles with turnovers. That's been the case all season long. I'm not sure how much better. I don't think they can get much better in either of those things. That's just what they are this season. And I think going forward, when you think about roster construction and you think about off-season work dudes need to do, as individuals, I think some of that as to some of what they're struggling with right now is absolutely in play for off-season personal individual growth and development and roster building. So you'd want people like Desmond Bane, Jaren, Santi. I know he's a free agent, but Santi from a personal standpoint to say, okay, cool, I can get downhill. Let me work on going side to side a little bit. Let me work on setting a defender up who's guarding me on ball side to side and then going by them. Because all of them, if they're going downhill, fine. But the second you cut them off, then Jaren has a nice little spin that protects the ball, but the other two don't have much of anything, and it ends up getting poked away. The Thunder got a couple of just on-ball turnovers where they're just poking the ball out of dudes' hands as they're dribbling it. Santi had one. Dez had a couple. I think they got Ja from behind once. You can't do that, have that many turnovers, and give up 20-plus points in off of turnovers and in transition and expect to beat anybody worth a damn in the NBA.
Yeah, it also seems to me like whoever is in charge of the team next year, it feels like to me one of the priorities is, how can I figure out a way to have Ja and Jaren on the offensive end play well at the same time? Because it feels like at this point, if you're running a style that caters to one, it doesn't fit the other. It seems to me like finding that balance is an important part for this team.
Yeah, and that's the case for everybody's top two players. The Lakers are going through that.
Yeah, that's
right,
a fair
now.
Point.
Now I got Luka on the brain. So the Mavericks last year with Luka and Kyrie. are trying to figure some of that out also. When you've got two players who are good to great on the offensive side of the ball, you've got to figure out how to optimize what they are together. Yesterday, I thought they did an okay job of that. Both Ja and Jaren had pretty solid games yesterday. Now, solid is not going to be good enough. They both, two of those three, Ja, Jaren, and I'll throw Dez in there, two of those three, I think, have to be incredible if they're going to get a game from the Thunder. And by incredible, I mean triple-double or 40-point, God forbid, a 50-point outing from somebody.
Yeah, just an out-of-the-world, out-of-body shooting experience. Yeah,
I'm not sure what happens when one of those players does that. What happens with the other players, the other two of the Grizzlies' big three? I'm not sure what happens with them, but that's what it's going to take. It's going to take somebody going for 40, another person going for like a 20-10-10 type thing, and the other one being respectable from scoring and defending as well if they're going to get a game in this series.
Do you think that anything that has happened thus far says anything one way or the other about Tuomas Iasalo?
That's tough because you give him 9 games. Well, how many?
Yeah.
It was
nine regular season, 2 play in and 2 playoffs so far, right?
Yeah, that's tough. Not a whole lot of time. I would like more. If I'm taking a look at a coach, I would like more than just 12 games or whatever it is that he's coached. But I do think it says something. It doesn't say nothing. He's been there all season. He's been lead assistant all season. So it's not like he's walking in completely blind to what the team is from a player personality standpoint and a player skill standpoint. It does say something about him this playoff series. But again, you might look around and say, and I can't fault anybody for looking around and saying, hey, let's give him a chance, start of the season all the way through to see what he can do and see what adjustments he's able to make. I'm not sure 12 games is enough games for him to make any sort of adjustments to what the team is doing. God forbid, adjustments to the other team's adjustments in the NBA. So I could understand, say, hey, you know what, let's see if we can give him what, let's see what happens when we give him a full season of work.
I still feel like a team that's often criticized for not having enough experience on it, enough veterans on it, like shouldn't there be a veteran or some experience in the coaching position as well here?
Yeah, but this team's got veteran experience. I don't know what the hell we call Ja. It's not a veteran. Jaren is not a veteran. Dez is not a veteran. Santi is not a veteran. Luke Kennard is not a veteran. Like, how many years do you got to play in this damn league for you to be called a veteran? They've got veterans on this team. We just coddle them for some reason. I'm not sure, especially the first three I named. I'm not really sure why that is.
Maybe it's veterans
they've been in the playoffs.
Maybe it's veterans with playoff, more playoff success. Maybe that's what it is.
What we really mean is just guys older than them.
Yeah. Older players.
25. You don't need nobody older. You the older one. What are we talking about here? Go out there and play.
They're not the oldest of them.
They're grown. At 25, you can rent a car. That's what makes you grow in America. I thought this was America we were living in. You can rent a car. You're officially grown, bro. Like, get out there.
Yeah, you don't have to pay the extra tax. I mean, I
know, but they've been with each other. I think that's possible. I mean, that's part of the, like, when you grow up and all you know is this, like, they feel like there needs to be a different voice, I guess, is why when people act like the veteran, like somebody with the experience of going further into the playoffs, knowing what it takes to take that next leap. Because we know they haven't taken that next leap yet.
Well, I think, CJ, to your point, because I think you asked an interesting question. It's like, why coddle? And I don't even know if coddle is the right word, but it's like, why talk around it? And I think the answer to that is, I think for the first time, people are really starting to question, like, okay, are all three of these guys, like, we used to just have this assumption. It was like, if all three play well, like, they're good enough. Like, they're going to be at the top of the sport. And I think now, it's not their fault primarily, but I think that there's this coming to grips of, I don't know, man, what if all three of these guys aren't good enough? That seems to me to be kind of part of psychologically what goes into the question.
I'm not sure how it's not those three's fault. They're the face of the franchise. They're the ones making all of the money. They're the ones that are the all-star defensive player of the year, fringe all-star, all-NBA people on the team. That's who it's got to be on. It can't be on Zach Edey because he's a rookie. It can't be on Gigi, second-year player coming off of an injury, Vince, second-year or third-year player coming off an injury. It can't be on those guys. It can't be on role players when it is this. It's got to fall on the shoulders of your three best players. And that's where they've got to and
or your general manager.
Or maybe they haven't. Even then, right, like you've got to, even if you are saying or if you're in the camp of, hey, this team isn't built very, very well, they still got healthy Ja, healthy Dez, healthy Jaren. And it can't be getting the hell beat out of you by 51 points. At no point in time with all of them healthy is it acceptable for them to be getting beat like that. That's not on the coach. That's not on the general manager. That's on those three as leaders of this team, as the three best players on this team. Now, again, they had a moment in game two where it very easily could have been what it was in game one. And what ends up happening is Ja steps up, Jaren steps up in that third quarter, and they say, no, we're not going to go out like this. Ja, Jaren, Dez combined for two-thirds of the team scoring yesterday in just a sheer battle of wills. All right, if we're going to go, we're not going to go like this. Jaren, what he was able to do in that third quarter was particularly impressive and what made the foul trouble thing so frustrating in the first half. If they're going to have any chance in this, they'll need that Jaren. They'll need that selfish Jaren where he catches the ball and says, all right, I'm the best offensive option we got. It's probably better for me to take a contested shot than it is for me to swing to a wide open player and let that player shoot a wide open three. That's just where they are right now from a roster standpoint. And I would hope to see, and I think that we saw it in game two and we will continue to see it, those three step up and meet that moment.
Is there someone that you'd like to see get a shot in game three to maybe kind of change up anything?
Nope, because none of the rest of them dudes matter. It's those three. It's Jaren, Ja, and Dez. That's all I want. I can't think of anybody else who would make any sort of a difference in a close game three. You know, Marvin Bagley had a fine game when the Grizzlies were getting beat by 51, but yesterday in a closer game, more competitive game, you almost couldn't play Marvin Bagley. At times.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what I think that in blowouts and in games that don't matter, your G.G. Jacksons of the world, your Vince Williams Juniors of the world, your Marvin Bagleys of the world, hell, your Luke Kennards of the world.
Sure.
I think they can put up some pretty impressive stats and give you hope about something potentially maybe coming down the line if they can put it all together. But in a close game, in a game that matters, is not on them. And I'm not sure what they could give you that Ja, Jaren, and Dez can't give you more of. You know, that's who this is on. Your stars got to be stars. Role players do play better at home in the playoffs, but your stars have to be stars. And the Grizzlies, from the way that they built this thing and the way they divvied out the money and the way that if we looked at production percentages and usage rates and all of those types of things, the way that it's all set up is, hey, we believe in these three dudes right here. These three are our stars. Ja, Jaren, Dez are our stars. They've got to go out there and be spectacular.
Well, I mean, so tomorrow night, it is game three. What are for the fans listening here, like, why should I go to this game? I mean, the Grizzlies, they've lost by 51 and 19. What is the point of going? What would you tell them?
There's nothing like playoff basketball, man. And it's only 30 of these teams. And only 16 of them get into the playoffs. So you've got a chance to come out and do something that most of the nation does not get to experience and be a part of live. This city, you guys know, this city radiates with energy that is indescribable, excitement, fun, intensity. It radiates with energy starting from FedEx Forum out. And it emanates out throughout the course of the city come playoff time. It is a great atmosphere inside of the arena. And listen, you might be the difference in this game. The Grizzlies cut that thing to what, 6 or 8 points?
Eight, I believe. I think the closest he got was eight.
And I had to turn my TV down to start the fourth quarter. That's how loud OKC was to start that fourth quarter. Ja Morant on the bench, question why that was. But either way goes, Ja Morant on the bench, loud fans, energetic fans, starting to go on a hell of a run and put the game away from in the first 2 minutes of the game. And some of that is them feeding off of the energy of the crowd. I question if that game was played here and it was the other way around, what would have happened? That slow start in the first quarter for the Grizzlies, where they missed 10 of their first 10 shots. You know, I wonder if the crowd was in their favor and it didn't feel like the walls were closing in on them. If that would have been the case, you have a chance to come out here and impact a game. And I don't think it's fair for me or for anybody else to say, hey, dudes on the court try, dudes on the court compete, and you aren't willing to come out here and compete as a fan and yell and stomp and scream and be as loud as you can, start the impromptu whoop that tricks, all of that jazz. It's getting to do whoop the for the chance of participating in a whoop that trick chant in FedEx form, that is worth the price of admission alone. Like it is an incredible moment when you get all 17,000, 18,000 people chanting whoop that trick inside FedEx form during the NBA playoff. It's a whole lot of fun. You don't want to miss it.
CJ, we appreciate it, buddy.
I appreciate y'all.
CJ Hurd of Grind City Media. When we come back,
I hope we get to that whoop that trick moment because you've got to get there, right?
Absolutely.
It does not happen early.
No.
They've got to be still competitive in the second half.
Post hammer nail coffin.
Yes.
When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right, Kevin, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I got to go with Mark Andrews. I want to give him credit for actually talking about the play because most people that have that type of play, they just kind of act like it never happened. He did, however, say, my gloves were wet on the two-point drop, but I still should have made the play. I do like that. Gloves were wet. Got to blame it on the gloves. Want to thank CJ Hurd for joining the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Kevin, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.